25 years earlier. Part 2. Smoke in his nostrils, roaring in his ears, blood on his tongue. Last to come clear, faint swirling light clouded with dust that stung his eyes. Komak sat up amid the wreckage of their craft and took stock of the situation. The ship remained more or less intact, which he knew because the temperature remained constant. Through the viewport, he could see the planetoid's surface, salt-crusted, small crystals glittering in the howling winds. They'd made landfall on the slope of a hill, it seemed, because the entire ship tilted perilously to one side. Deep scrapes the ship had left in the surface revealed dark green stone beneath, buried in centimeters of salt.
"I must find Master Simix," he thought. That was his most important responsibility, but that didn't mean he could ignore those closer to hand.
Next to him, Orla leaned forward, bracing her hands against the pilot's console. Her breaths came shallow and fast.
"Orla,"
Komak managed to say.
"Are you all right?"
"Yes."
She sounded as if she wasn't completely sure. Komak reached out with a force to find the other two passengers. Master Laret Sovereign came clear to him almost instantly. She'd moved away from the cockpit, in pain but focused, and yet her spirit was suffused with sorrow. Where Master Simix should have been, where his calm, powerful centeredness in the force had always been, Komak found nothing.
"Master Simix!"
he called, willing himself not to know what the Force had already told him. For the first time in his life, he pushed the Force away, thought of it as a lie. Komak got to his feet and walked up the uneven deck toward the back of the ship.
"Master!"
Laret Sovereign appeared in the doorway, soot staining her face and robes. She was tall for a human female, with striking features and a commanding presence, even at this confusing, difficult moment. Her golden brown eyes met his evenly.
"I'm sorry, Padawan Vitus. Your master is again at one with the Force."
Every tenet of Jedi doctrine proclaimed that Komak should feel happy for Master Simix, who had been freed from the illusion of mortality and the weakness of the flesh. Instead, Komak felt as though his guts had been torn out by a rancor's claws. When he shouldered his way past Master Laret, she raised no objection, just let him go. Within a few steps, Komak found Master Simix lying crumpled in one corner. The safety harness aboard this shuttle had not been configured for Philithar or any other limbless species. Simix had laughed about it when they boarded, saying he would take his chances.
"Why didn't I insist?"
Master Simix, always cautious with the lives of others, had sometimes been careless with his own. More than once, Komak had had to point that out. Generally, it pleased Simix when he did so. He said he'd outsourced his sense of self-preservation to his apprentice. And yet this time, this one fatal time, Komak had let it go.
"It was my job to remind him of the risks,"
Komak told himself as he knelt beside his master's scaly green body and reverently closed his eyes. It had not been his decision alone to take the T1 shuttle, and yet whatever portion of the blame belonged to him would forever be a heavy weight to bear.
"About time something went according to plan,"
Isomer growled. Before him glowed the readouts that showed the location of the crashed Jedi vessel. He motioned to two of the guards.
"You, get out there. If anyone survived, make sure they don't survive much longer."
This, too, had been foreseen by the Hutts. As they'd explained to Isomer, they wanted the Jedi to travel to that area of space, not merely in search of Force-sensitive infants or on solitary journeys of discovery, but as part of a mission. A mission that would fail terribly. One that would prove to the people of these worlds that neither the distant Republic nor the Jedi could save them. The old hostility toward the Republic seemed to be weakening. The Hutts wanted it strengthened.
Then, if these Outlanders wanted to conduct commerce with the greater galaxy, they would have to go through the Directorate, and by extension, their new overlords, the Hutts, though Isomer thought less about that aspect of it. Their percentage would be no more than a token, an afterthought. He preferred imagining himself seated among heaped riches, wealthy beyond the dreams of avarice. All he had to do was ensure that nothing stood in the way of the Hutts' plans for mass enslavement. In the prisoner's corner, Monarch Castle ventured under his breath.
I suppose those are our rescuers. Were our rescuers,
Queen Thandeka replied.
Now they're targets, if they survive the crash at all, that is. I've heard the Jedi are very strong,
Castle said with what sounded like genuine hope.
Perhaps his guards won't be able to destroy them.
Queen Thandeka sighed. The two of them had been huddled together for some time, long enough for her distrust of the Erino ruler to dissipate somewhat.
You're trying to make me feel better.
Castle shrugged and gave her a sheepish smile.
Not sure we could feel much worse.
Thandeka said nothing. It appeared Castle couldn't see as far into the future as she could, a blindness she envied. Because when she projected how this scenario would ultimately play out, every possible track ended with both of them dead. Orla took Komak's arm as they stumbled out into the frigid, salt-sharpened wind. He had only minor injuries and didn't need the physical support, but no doubt she felt contact with another person might help steady him within. The frenzy of grief he felt reverberated through the Force. He could tell that both Orla and Master Laret sensed it. If one of them dreamed of correcting him, dared to insist that the Jedi should not feel such sorrow, Komak would not be responsible for his actions. However, at the moment, Master Laret remained focused on their goal.
The caves!
She called over the howling gale, gesturing to the vague outline of an entrance farther along the hill.
Let's go!
Together they stumbled through the salt dunes. Komak breathed a sigh of relief when their party finally staggered into the cave. Inside, the stones seemed to have been polished, scoured smooth by centuries of salt, so much so that the cave walls almost looked wet as they glimmered in the light of the Jedi's glow rods. Or maybe not only by salt. As Komak's eyes adjusted to the darkness, he recognized carvings in the walls that depicted a large, hooded serpent. Not a philothar, but enough like one that he had to turn his head away. It was as though Master Simix's portrait had been etched there centuries before to wait for them.
The kidnappers will raid the wreckage soon,
Master Laret said.
I regret leaving Simix's body behind, but if they find him, they may believe that Simix traveled alone. If so, that buys us time to find the kidnapper's lair.
Komak managed to say,
These carvings. Master Simix said something about them. About serpents playing a large part in the local lore.
He'd been expected to read up on the area's folklore on their journey there. Simix had urged him to do so. Even though legend and myth were interests of Komak's, he'd only skimmed through the reading. They had piloting to do, fighting to anticipate. What were the chances folklore would come into any of that? Or so he'd thought. At the moment, with the carved serpent staring down at him, Komak was not as sure. Orla straightened.
The carvings feel important, like the Force is trying to tell us something. Should we turn back?
Master Laret inclined her head, acknowledging Orla's words without agreeing to them.
To turn back and go elsewhere, we would need somewhere else to go. We have no such place. Our duty is to press forward.
But if...
Orla said, her voice breaking off as they all heard it. A strange sound from deeper within the caves, almost a rustling. No, too heavy for that. She and Komak tensed. Master Laret ahead of them already had her lightsaber in hand and activated it just in time for its blue glow to reveal the enormous white snake, many meters long and more than a meter wide, slithering toward them with its fangs bared.